today.
The meeting of the Senate Finance Committee will please come to order. It's Tuesday, April 3rd, 2012. And our first agenda item is Senate File 2304, Senator Bonnef, on the Sunset Advisory Commission's recommendations.
Your hot dish.
Good morning, Senator Bonnef.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. Madam Chair, before I begin, there is an amendment. If you would like to adopt the amendment first, it's the A24. We have a quorum.
Yeah, I thought we did for a minute there. I don't. Who left? We do have a quorum.
Carrie's over
yes,
there.
We do have a quorum.
Okay, good.
So Senator Bonnef moves the A4 amendment.
24.
Oh, 24 amendment. I'm sorry. Senator Bonnef, do you want to explain it?
Sure, Madam Chair. And actually, I think before I do just explain the A24, just a couple words about the Sunset Commission. For anyone who has not been in a previous committee where we've presented it, just so people understand, the Sunset Commission was established in law last session, and the purpose of the Sunset Commission is to review all state agencies, councils, boards, commissions, as to whether or not they are fulfilling an objective that we all think is still needed, and in fact, to make changes and recommendations based on what we discover in that Sunset review process. So the Sunset Commission was made up of 12 members, six Republicans, six Democrats. Four of the Democrats were appointed by the governor. And after over 30 hours of formal testimony, what you have before you today is a result of that work and that recommendation. So moving to the amendment itself, on page 1, lines 2 through 16, clarifies the role of the Department of Admin and its SMART program. So we had established, as part of the Sunset Commission review process, the importance of using a shared services approach with regard to back office functions. And the health licensing boards have a pretty unique system in that they use it's called the ASU, Administrative Services Unit, to do all of their back office functions. We found that some of the councils and commissions were not taking advantage of the SMART function in the Department of Admin as much as we'd like. And so this provision in the amendment directs the Department of Admin to have service level agreements with those agencies. And in addition, it makes certain that the agencies served do retain the ownership and responsibility for their spending decisions as they would be charged for those services. On page 1, lines 17 through 26, clarifies that revenues in the state government special revenue fund generated by license fees are to be used only for the purpose of regulating those occupations and not transferred to the general fund. This is a pretty significant piece of the Sunset Commission review. As we went through all of the health licensing board's financial structure and saw the kinds of fees that they were charging their licensees and then in many cases carrying reserves, we discovered that, as you know, no surprise, that then that we were at balancing budget times taking from those reserves to balance the budget. And so this language says that is something that cannot be done. In addition, within the bill and not in this amendment, we asked those health licensing boards to do a review of their fees using a 5-year average, a look back, and then to adjust their fees accordingly and come back to us what those should be, because we are not supportive of having the health licensing boards charge fees in excess of what would be required. Next, on page 1, lines 27 through 29, that clarifies new requirements regarding reporting of disciplinary actions for licensing boards on their website.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Senator Cohen.
Commissioner Bonnef, why, I'm sorry, I interrupted you, so you're going to get through the other sections, but why are sections 12, 13, 14 in here?
Madam Chair, Senator Cohn.
Senator Bonner.
I'm sorry, it looks like there's some other related sections. Section 20. Section 21. So why are these in this bill?
So, Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, we had started our review process with the health licensing boards, and then following the health licensing boards, we moved to councils and commissions. And that went pretty smoothly, and we actually left that part of our review cycle thinking that other than concern around the fees and the administrative things which I mentioned, that we were going to just move on. And then following that action, it came to light that the Star Tribune was doing an investigation of the health licensing boards. And so we were disappointed that that wasn't brought up during our review process, and we as a commission spoke and decided that it wouldn't be appropriate, given they were under review at that time, to just walk over that fact and not address it. And so we called them back before the Sunset Commission, and we explored what we might want to recommend as a result of discovering that there were, in fact, issues around investigations being reported and not closed, around patients feeling as though their concerns weren't addressed, a lack of transparency, all the things that were revealed in the investigation. And so we did spend some time on the Sunset Commission looking at actions we could take so that when they're, you know, these commissions and boards will now be on another 12-year review cycle. So we felt that we wouldn't be doing our job as a Sunset Commission without using the occasion to actually recommend steps that could be taken to address those issues.
So,
Senator Cohen.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Bonner, as I understand it, now we set up the Sunset Commission to take a look at whether or not councils, agencies, commissions, whatever, ought to continue in existence. And so the Sunset Commission, empowered to do that, people on the Sunset Commission read a newspaper story. And so instead of the Health and Human Services Committee dealing with the issue, which you think would be the appropriate place to deal with the question of whether or not there was proper oversight conducted by the various health regulatory agencies, it was done by the Sunset Commission.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Do I understand this correctly?
Senator Cohen, I think you are addressing the bill while she's trying to go through the amendment.
Well, but okay, we did the fees, and then we went on to, I thought, the other. I'm sorry.
She hasn't gotten to the end of the amendment.
All right. See, that's what I get for getting ahead of myself. I was just so excited to read about the Sunset Commission and then realize that, okay. Thank you, Senator Olson.
Senator Bonner, if you want to go back to the amendment, please.
Madam Chair. So on page 1, lines 30 through 35, and page 2, lines 1 through 14, adds four legislators to the Combative Sports Commission in order to improve legislative oversight. That was actually a pretty contentious part of our work together. We discovered as we reviewed particularly the councils and commissions that there were some problems, particularly with the Council on Black Minnesotans and the Combative Sports Commission, that there were problems that required some real analysis on whether or not they should be sunset, should they continue in that form. And so at one point we had recommended that, well, it was actually a member of the Sunset Commission recommended that the Combative Sports Commission be combined with the Amateur Sports Commission. We insisted that some actual work and study be done with regard to that recommendation. The Office of Legislative Auditor combined with Department of Admin did do a report and recommended that not happen, and then gave us three different options of ways to go in place of doing that, suggesting that they could be folded into other administrative branches. We could not get any agreement around which one was best suited towards it. And then as we were in Judiciary, Senator Limmer offered an amendment that put the Combative Sports Commission on the same track as we have the Council on Black Minnesotans, which is really a probationary track, which says while they aren't sunset, they are scheduled to come under review in the next two-year cycle. Senator Limmer offered that amendment. I was a little bit concerned because I felt the difference between the Council on Black Minnesotans and the Combative Sports Commission in terms of structure is that we have legislators on the Council of Black Minnesotan Commission, and they came forward and stood up for the Council on Black Minnesotans and said, do not sunset them. We will vouch for working with them over the next two-year period. So in doing some conversations and thinking with various members in the legislature, this amendment adds four legislators to the Combative Sports Commission so that they, too, can be reviewed in the next two-year cycle and give them a chance to correct some of the things that were found to be lacking as we did their review. And then finally, on page 2, lines 15 through 27, revises provisions relating to a study by the legislative auditor of the Medical Practice Act itself and its implementation by the Board of Medical Practice. So the issue which Senator Cohen is referring to, as we did talk about how we might respond to some of the problems that were brought forward, it was brought to our attention that there's actually a national board that does programmatic reviews of health licensing boards around the country, and that we realized that that was a direction we wanted to take, that we could recommend some preliminary things within the confines of this bill, but we certainly don't have enough information to say whether or not the health licensing board, the medical board, is doing things in the right way, whether they should make this change, that change. And so, in fact, we did take a much broader perspective and say that we wanted to have a programmatic review. So we actually, in our bill before you, have directed the legislative auditor to do a special investigation of this board and have worked with the health licensing board, and they have agreed to take from their funds, their special revenue funds, $45,000 to allow that investigation to take place. And then finally, because Senator Cohen did make those comments, and we can go back to them after we've had a chance to move this amendment, I will say that the actual language in the Sunset Review does say that we are to make recommendations as to changes given which agencies, boards, and commissions are before us, so that, in fact, the types of changes you see within this amendment and within the bill, we would assert that it's not going beyond the scope of the law.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, the way that I have engrossed this, on page 10, you remove all of the appropriation from lines 1010 to 1017, and then the additional. It appears on page 2.23 of the amendment, but as I engross it, so am I to understand that there's only $45,000 left in here?
Yes, Senator Madam Anna. Chair, Senator Fischbach, yes, we are not going to be adding staff. The Sunset Commission would have preferred to add staff to both the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and I would like to just acknowledge the tremendous work that Greg Hubinger and his staff have provided the council as well as the OLA. So we actually did recommend that staff be added, but given our fiscal situation and our sense that that would not happen, we did take that out.
So, Madam Senator Chair, Fischbach. Senator Bonoff, how does this change, how does the amendment change the fiscal note? The fiscal note that I'm looking at does say preliminary, but it was what was handed out, because there's a lot of FTEs on here.
Yep. Madam Chair, Senator Fischbach, it takes out all of the blank appropriations.
But, Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I guess I'm wondering I understand it takes out the blank appropriations. I confirm that. But on the preliminary fiscal note, there are all kinds of FTEs, and I'm wondering how that affects it.
Mr. Hubinger.
Yes, Senator Bonoff, it is originally showing a number of FTEs, and I know that you're altering the bill, but
right.
We don't have an updated fiscal note to go with the amendment, and we're trying to conclude what the cost.
Madam Chair, Senator Fischbach, and I may need to have Mr. Hubinger, perhaps Mr. Gustafson, address it, but in the bill originally, there was a good deal of language associated to the background checks, which we have taken out and put as a study. And so I know the original fiscal note included costs that would be borne by the health licensing boards, but they would need appropriations to accomplish those tasks. Those are have been taken from the bill. Mr. Hubinger, can you address?
Mr. Hubinger?
Madam Chair and Senator Fischbach, I would only add that with the language that's being adopted that relates to the Department of Administration and their SMART program, that we understand that that eliminates the $300,000 fiscal note for that department. The amendments don't alter the need for the fee and the expenses in the special government, state government special revenue fund for the fees for the health licensing boards for the updates to their websites.
And, Madam
Senator
Chair,
Fischbach.
Madam Chair, Mr. Hubinger, maybe we could explain. I don't know if you guys have a copy of this.
I have it now.
I have a copy of the
I haven't seen this one.
Fiscal note. If there's anything on there that you could point to, because this is, there's cost to it, and there's a lot of FTEs, and I'm just wondering how it's changed, if there's any.
Madam Chair, I would, and this is the first time I've seen, it's been difficult because the bill has changed in each committee and we did not get an updated fiscal note. It is actually our intention not to have a cost to this bill other than the $45,000 that will be borne by the Medical Health Licensing Board. So if I could ask Mr. Gustafson perhaps to address the fiscal note that we have before us.
Mr. Gustafson.
Madam Chair, members, Senator Bonoff's correct. The fiscal note has been, because of the number of agencies involved and the changes that have happened at each committee stop, it's been difficult to get a completed fiscal note. You're absolutely right. There were a number of FTEs on this version of the fiscal note was the most recent where most of the agencies had responded and MMB had reviewed it. Many of the costs, as Mr. Hubinger noted, have been through the amendments that have occurred have come out, particularly the costs and the FTEs assumed by the legislature or the Legislative Audit Commission and the Department of Administration. The most significant costs that seems to remain in the bill are those from Article 2, Section 12, I believe, with regard to providing material on health licensing board websites that currently does not exist there. That's the most significant and lengthy portion of the fiscal note where the health licensing boards note their assumptions and the cost to acquire the information required and to post it on their websites. There are no appropriations in the bill to the health licensing boards. We've asked for an updated fiscal note and are trying to get their most recent estimates of what those costs from Section 12 or those relevant sections would be. But as it exists now, that's the most significant cost, but there are no appropriations in the bill for that.
And Madam Chair, Senator Fischbach.
Senator Bonner.
Unfortunately, I don't know that somebody from the Health Licensing Board is here this morning. I did speak to Mr. Renner from the MMA, and it is our understanding they do currently have a website. They do collect this information. They did not bring a concern to us that they would need to establish a new fee in order to accomplish these costs. But one thing, I was made aware that there would be this conversation this morning. Last night I spoke to Mr. Gustafson, and again, I would be surprised if it would require them to charge their licensees an additional fee to accomplish this because they do collect the data. But if members would be more comfortable, perhaps we could add a sentence similar to what we do with the OET surcharge, where it's clear in the bill that any costs associated with updating the background information would be borne by the Health Licensing Board as a special assessment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonhoff, not familiar with the construct of that health licensing boards, do they have the power to themselves to raise fees?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, they have to come back to the legislature and request that, and then they raise the fees, and then it's an appropriation that we give them based on the fees they generate.
So, Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoff, then there are no fee increases for the Health Licensing Board in this bill?
Correct, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, correct.
Okay, so that would seem to have an impact on the thank you, Madam Chair. That shouldn't have that impact, but I think that clarifying language might be might be helpful and, mm-hmm. and clarify for them what their the expectation is.
Senator Bonhoeff, do you know what their fund balances are currently?
Madam Chair, I don't have that with me today. They were carrying a fund balance. Is there?
$500,000.
Mr. Hubinger has just told me $500,000.
Oh. Okay. And I don't know if that's normal that they have that much or well, if it's
Madam Chair,
cyclical.
That is why we did ask them to go back and do a five-year rolling average and come back to us with a recommendation of because we actually do think that perhaps there could be a reduction in fees. It seemed to us that was a heavy amount to carry forward.
Senator Bonhoeff, can I ask you about the section where it says that the fees collected must be used only to pay the costs and that they must not be transferred by the legislature? And do you remember, are any of those funds, have some of them been taken in this last budget cycle? Mr.
Hubinger,
do you know?
I remember the amount of
this. Right. Mr. Hubinger?
Madam Chair, we understand that in the last session that an amount was taken from that balance to help balance the general fund.
Madam Chair, it was my understanding that the action was taken previously and then it was done last biennium, but that is that correct? And that actually we did not, in the last cycle, we did not do that again.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoeff. I didn't remember taking any of them.
Madam Chair, we did not do that in our bills last year, but there was action taken previously that caused that to happen last time.
But it was, Mr. Hubinger, was it one time, and so we don't have any ongoing language that would be taking it into the future, and the budget was expecting that money. That isn't the case, right?
Madam Chair, you're correct. It was one time.
And, Senator Bonhoeff, in this instance, it is just for the health-related licensing boards that you're saying the transfer can't be made. I know we are still interested in that one for the electrical board. We didn't get that taken care of this session that said we can't take any more from them. But that is an ongoing one, but it's one of the few that I remember that started some time ago and continues to occur. And it's something we want to look at. I think Senator DeKreif has a bill related to that.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's not in this bill.
Okay. Other questions? I also have a question. I'm on the Legislative Audit Commission, and we have a section in here relating to directing the commission, the auditor, to do a special investigation. And I'm wondering if Mr. Nobles, I see, is here, if he would like to talk about this, because I think in the past we've tried to avoid putting in directives in statute about their job.
Madam Chair, members, Jim Nobles, legislative auditor. Yes, that is the case, Madam Chair, but if you will notice, it is a request. It's not a directive. And so it leaves the legislative auditor with the option. It is my intention to pursue this, however. I think given what has been revealed about the issues related to the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice, which is under the jurisdiction of the legislative auditor, that we should attempt to conduct the investigation or review that is being requested.
Are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Noble, the $45,000... Is that what it will take to do this audit?
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, that is money that is being offered to us. It is not money that we requested. I would intend to conduct the investigation with existing staff. However, there is a desire on the part of, I think, people who are interested that we would conduct our investigation with some collaboration with a national organization that Senator Bonhoeff just referred to. And it is possible that they would require some remuneration under a contract if we do that, and that's what that money would be used for. But as to the work that will be done by the Office of Legislative Auditor, I would intend to conduct that with the staff that we currently have.
Senator Perry.
Madam Chair, thank you. Senator Bonhoeff, is it Is it the intent that this $45,000 would come out of the medical board's fund?
Senator Bonner?
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, yes, but when we first put the $45,000, that was because we got information that that's what it would cost to do it with the National Licensing Board. We prefer to have our OLA be the lead. We're not sure if that's going to get by the legislature, in which case we would have to contract with the national board, and so we're leaving it in here. But perhaps we might want to say up to $45,000 is appropriated. I think that that would give us both the flexibility to go either way and make sure that we do have the resources available to do the proper review. We have asked Mr. Nobles, even if this passes and the Office of Legislative Auditor is the one to do the special investigation, we would like them to coordinate with the National Board, because I think if we really want to get insight into best practices around the country as part of our, not certainly based, you know, in its entirety on that, but we would like to have that best information available to us in this process.
Senator Perry?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then how would we get the $45,000 back from the medical board?
Senator Perry, Mr. Gustafson has an explanation.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, based on Mr. Noble's comments, if we appropriate $45,000 to OLA for this purpose, and as the project goes forward, and if it's not spent at the end of the fiscal year, that money will cancel back to the fund from which it was appropriated. So this is coming out of the state government special revenue fund, where fees from the health boards are collected. If OLA does not spend that money, it will cancel back to that fund. And Madam Chair, to Senator Bonner's comment about up to $45,000, if $45,000 is appropriated, OLA would spend, couldn't spend no more than that. So that sort of serves the same purpose as an up to. And so the language as is would accomplish that purpose and would cancel back if Mr. Nobles is able to do it without additional resources.
All right.
And, Madam Chair, I might just add, if Senator Perry or others would like further specification, we could certainly work out language that says exactly what I indicated, that this money would be only for remuneration under a contract with this national organization. It is not funds that we would use otherwise.
I think having you say that on record is maybe sufficient for us.
Yeah.
Senator Bonner, it's been pointed out to me that on line 2.28, the reference to section 21 should be section 23.
Oh, thank you.
And can we incorporate that into your amendment?
Yes, please do, Madam Chair.
So members, after the word section where it says 21, replace that with 23. Are there any other questions about the amendment? If not, or is there anyone else who wants to testify for or against it? If not, all in favor of the A24 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. And then on to the bigger bill. Senator Bonner, I just want to make sure I'm understanding the fiscal impact, because I understand now the $45,000, and we've got that addressed. But this whole issue of all these full-time equivalents, I just want to be convinced that we have removed most of the need for additional staffing here, if not all of it. And I don't know if there's someone here from the different agencies that have put in these requests for additional staffing, if this moves forward, that would like to address some of these issues. Please come forward if there's someone here. Senator Perry.
Madam Chair, on the bill in itself, on page one, I'm thinking there's needs to be a date changed. It says here on line 1.20, where they cross out 2012, they've inserted 2024. I believe it should be 2014.
Senator Bonner, how often are these reviewed?
Madam Chair and Senator Perry, no, 2024 is accurate, and the reason why Combative Sports Commission and Council on Black Minnesotans are crossed out is because they, in fact, will be reviewed prior to 2024, and that's in a different place in the bill. The ones that are in there are the ones that passed the sunset review and are back now on the 12-year cycle.
Senator Bonoff, how many agencies are on the list for review? Well, I'm thinking if it's, you've done quite a few this year, but if it's going to take 12 years to get back to them, how many are there?
Madam Chair, that bill was very comprehensive, and it said every state agency and every council commission would be reviewed. Now, the state agencies are treated a little bit differently in that the ones before you today, if we did not act this cycle, they would automatically sunset, whereas the state agencies, that's not the case for. But there, you know, there isn't anything left untouched in regard to the Sunset Commission bill.
So these would, as you can see, the 2012 is crossed out because otherwise they would expire at the end of June. And so there's a little bit of immediacy to this bill in this section, at least. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point of question. Maybe Mr. Hubinger can help me. The council that oversees and reviews the DNR hunting licenses and fees, is that something that this legislation pertains to?
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, the sunset law provides that when a department is being reviewed, all of that department's advisory councils are also reviewed in the same cycle.
Thank you. Would you like to identify yourself, please?
Madam Chair, Michelle Tuckner with Department of Public Safety, Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement. I just wanted to advise that the revised third engrossment there made changes that there is no fiscal impact to DPS, so those two positions in the funding listed, once is revised, there is no fiscal impact.
Thank you. Are there any testifiers here from the Boards of Health? Comment on it.
Madam Chair, they've been coming to every single hearing. I'm surprised that they are not here this morning. I know, Madam Chair, Dave Renner from MMA is here if you have any questions for him. But
do members have any questions? Senator Bonoff, because we haven't received an updated fiscal note, I know there's some urgency in getting this bill approved, otherwise these commissions sunset in June. I'm a little nervous that we don't have. I'm glad the Department of Public Safety came forward. I wish we had more word from the other commissions and agencies that could tell us that they believe their concerns about the fiscal impact have been addressed. If I'm going to hear from them down the road, we may have to do something on the floor to address it further.
Well, Madam Chair, the reason why there are no members present is that we had worked through this language and they were comfortable that there were no fees, and that is the reason for their absence, but I would be happy to get something in writing with regard to that.
But Madam Chair?
Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, if the issue of expanded authority for fees or any appropriations isn't in the bill, none of them would get it, would they? So the fiscal note couldn't come to pass.
This is true.
Yes,
if we're not appropriating the money, you are correct. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Just a point of interest, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. During the review cycles that go on, has there ever been any councils that have been dropped?
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, this was the first round of review by the Sunset Commission, and it specifically made recommendations regarding the Council on Black Minnesotans and the Combative Sports Commission.
You know, members, a number of years ago, probably at least 10, I was on the local and state government, and Senator Vickerman tasked me with going through all of these different organizations, and we put out notices to find out how many of them felt that they were still needed, and some of them never responded. So those were the ones we focused on. But by the time it was over, I think we had dropped one. But there were some that were so inactive that that they had no one who responded when we sent out a letter asking for information about their organization or council or board. But as the hearings came and we had them on the list, they showed up. And so in the end, most of them pled their case and ended up surviving the process. But one of them faded away into history, and I can't even remember which one it is right now. But it is a little difficult to get rid of them. They always have a special interest group behind them somewhere. Please identify yourself.
Hi, Lenore Madigan with Department of Administration. Madam Chair, members, the Department of Administration's note, it becomes absorbed costs with the A24 amendment. So we'll have like $18,000 in the first 6 months of the fiscal year of absorbed cost in the work we'll be doing.
Thank you. Thank you for coming forward.
Madam Chair, Paul Mandel, Principal Planner for the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. With the approved amendment, there is no fiscal impact on the Capital Area Planning Board. And in addition to Senator Ingebrigtsen's question, the Labor Interpretive Center Board, which was established back in 1993, has been repealed. The legislation has been repealed. Their work was done with the creation of the Minnesota Workers Memorial. So that board, which has ceased to exist, basically was still in the books. So they have been that legislation has been repealed with this act.
Thank you. Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think just for the committee's I served on the board with Senator Bonoff, and I'm one that truly is not pleased with the way things came out. I have grave concerns on how some of these boards are given funding and yet have no direction, no oversight, have turned in yearly plans that truly have been just copied from year after year. My concern with, I believe that there wasn't enough intestinal fortitude to do some of the right things that needed to be done on that board. For what reason, I don't know. But I'm concerned when boards were brought together as an advisory that are now becoming a full-fledged agency where they're trying to do work with no direction. So I think if there was any one thing that this Sunset Commission did for many was to start opening a lot of questions up. Is there truly a need? And if there is, if a board is getting $250,000, what is the real intent? Are they an advisory board to the executive branch or to the governor? And if so, what is it they're supposed to be doing? Are they supposed to be engaging in programs? I think that is the direction I was hoping to see the Sunset Commission going in looking at these boards. And so I believe that there's a ton of work that needs to be done, and each one of these have to be highly scrutinized. Based on some of the issues we saw with the Council of Black Minnesotans and the issues they were having and the amount of money they were getting. And so when we look at that, moving forward, I'm just concerned that we haven't specifically focused on what is the real need for these councils and the boards.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen.
So, Madam Chair, now I can jump in. Thanks to Senator Olson for correcting me earlier, because Senator Perry's question begs the question of, so what exactly is the purpose of the Sunset Commission, and why does it exist? Because it is truly form over substance, and this legislation, this is not to criticize Senator Bonham for bringing this legislation, because I understand in the context of the Sunset Commission, as she indicated a few minutes ago, it's within the purview of what the Sunset Commission is supposed to do. But exactly what's the purpose of the committee structure in the state Senate and the state House that we need the Sunset Commission? Senator Perry, I serve on your committee. Why can't we do that work on your committee? Why can't we do that work during the interim? Why can't we do that work prior to session? Why can't we do that work during session? Why can't we do that work in a non-budget year? Instead, we set up this Sunset Commission. And then the Sunset Commission, given jurisdiction over every agency in the state comes up with questions about the Combative Sports Commission, which has an appropriation of, I believe, $65,000. That's really useful. Then we get into the questions. Senator Hand was here a minute ago. We get into the questions in the bill about the Star Trib story that pointed out concerns about the regulatory nature of the health commissions and how they were not properly looking at malpractice claims or whatever. Why wasn't that done in Senator Hand's committee? And what does that possibly have to do with the Sunset Commission, which was supposed to take a look at the totality, I thought, of the agencies and whether they should exist or disappear or move to another state or something. And instead, we have some of these considerations that ought to take place within the committees. And, Madam Chair, I remember at the start of last year's session, or in the organizational run-up to the session, there was this big celebration about how we were going to have a committee structure that, you know, really made sense and we'd get things done more efficiently, whatever. No, what we did is we created an overlay of the committee system to operate on an extra jurisdictional basis when we're not in session. That's what we did because apparently the committees couldn't handle the work that they were supposed to do, whether that was because they were too busy and so the new system was worse than form over substance, or that the new committees just weren't empowered to do the work. So this Sunset Commission is just foolishness. And so I'm not sure why Governor Dayton ever agreed to do this last year. Madam Chair, you folks must have caught him in a weaker moment when there were a million things going on at the end of the special session or in the run-up to the special session. This legislation makes it very clear that this whole Sunset Commission is form over substance, is meaningless. I would suggest in Roach, there's a kind of a slide into the jurisdiction of the committee process that's represented by this healthcare stuff, and then we come up with a couple of minor little commissions, the Council on Black Minnesotans or whatever, where there might be some concerns that have been raised as to what's going on operationally. And it's not done within the committees, where you would have the staff more directly involved with, say, that – I don't mean to pick on that particular commission, but since we're talking about it, where you'd have the staff more directly involved, more knowledgeable. You'd have the committee members hopefully more knowledgeable. Instead, we've set up this Sunset Commission. And I have no idea why we set up this Sunset Commission.
Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohn, I'm certainly not here to defend the legislation that was passed into law. But what I can say is that this group of 12 legislators and appointees of the governor actually did some substantive work. And with regard to Senator Perry's comments, I think we did feel as though the problems that were raised, in particular around the Combative Sports Commission and the Council on Black Minnesotans, were serious and did need to be looked into. And so while on page 3 of the bill, it requires all the councils to submit a report, make recommendations to address their issues, and report on outcome measures, while that may sound kind of trite in just one page, and you could say is form over substance, as you've said, I think what it does reflect is an understanding of those councils and commissions that somebody's really watching, somebody cares, and that, you know, the Council on Black Minnesotans had problems for years. Them becoming under Sunset Review actually caused an entire change in their management structure, in their focus, because they were going to be held accountable in a way that they had not been before. Now, should some committee have done that? Perhaps they should have, and perhaps committee chairs ought to relook at what is their purview of oversight, and are we fulfilling the mission that the legislature ought to fulfill? But I would just not want it to be said on the record that this particular commission did not do substantive work. The other thing I was most proud about is the bipartisan nature. As You know, everything you see and read says that we cannot work in a bipartisan way. This commission worked in a very bipartisan way and did reach consensus. There was some concern about should that combative sports commission just be sunset. And so members understand, sunset doesn't mean those functions go away. Sunset means it goes into the Department of Administration. And I will tell you, the Department of Administration was not jumping up and down to get that the Combative Sports Commission under their purview, because it is a strong regulatory function and they weren't set up to do that. And so with this amendment, we've bought ourselves a little bit of time so that we can make sure that as that martial arts and associated activities are taking place, that we are providing the kind of oversight that comes with having the state be a part of that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I'm not suggesting that the people on the commission weren't acting in good faith. I mean, when legislators are appointed to commissions, they take it very seriously, and they make sure they invent work to do. And do it in a good faith way. How many times have we seen that over the years? So my criticism is not directed at the individuals who are serving on the commission, nor the work that was done not being substantive and not coming up with some conclusions and things to do. I'm just suggesting that given the huge fanfare relative to this commission, and the fact that this commission was going to just get that state government and take the cost of government down and reduce government and all the regulatory crazy things government does, what we came up with was the Combative Sports Commission. Congratulations. And I was around when the Combative Sports Commission was set up several years ago, and I knew Governor Plenty wanted to do it, and I knew exactly it would lead to this, that it was ill-formed, ill-thought-out, and that there would be problems with the Combative Sports Commission. So you could have seen that coming from the moment the idea showed up. But my concern, Madam Chair, is that we've got, the language in this bill, and I'm not saying that the people on the commission didn't do their work and all the rest of it. We have in Section 7, Report on Personnel, by September 1st of odd-numbered year, a state agency, a commission for management budget, must report to the Sunset Advisory Commission the number of full-time equivalent employees. Maybe we could read the budget pages. Do we have to require management budget to do this in statute? We passed a budget. Maybe we could call up the agency and say, how many full-time employees do you have? Assistance to small agencies. The commissioner may provide administrative support services. We've been doing that for years. That was set up originally in the Carlson administration. Is there a reason that's not being done any longer? Do we have to set up an entire Sunset Commission to do what we've been doing or should have been doing years ago? So as I look at this legislation, this bill in front of us, it's not to suggest there aren't some good ideas here and maybe some necessary ideas. I'm just suggesting the whole thing is duplicative. And now we bring in the LCC, and we know what we've done with legislative budgets over the last number of years. I've worked with Mr. Hubinger. He and his staff do a remarkable job, and we, of course, keep on reducing staff year after year after year after year. But here's something else they can do if they're not doing anything else. So it just is, like I said, it is truly form over substance. But, Madam Chair, I want to congratulate the legislature for the tremendous insight and spectacular work we did in setting up the Sunset Commission with its, 12 legislators or however many legislators and appointees of the administration so that we can reform the Combative Sports Commission. Good work. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I was being a little bit sarcastic. I'm sorry.
So noted. Senator Bonoff, and we do have to keep moving here. We do have an amendment that was drafted. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but I don't know if it's something we want to do, because you indicated that the health boards do have some surplus funds, mm-hmm. and so this may not be something that we would have to address right now, is giving them authority to increase fees to implement the sections in the bill. I think it would be my preference, perhaps, just to wait and see if those surplus funds are are stable, get used up, if they come back and ask us if they need more.
Madam Chair, that would be my preference as well, because I do think that I would like the health licensing boards to examine their fees so that we don't have ongoing reserves. And given that they do have that reserve right now, I don't think this is needed. But I would hold off and reserve the right, after speaking to them, leaving here and going to the floor, that if there is that need, we could certainly offer the amendment, if you'd be comfortable.
Senator Bonoff, the only issue we might have is if they have the authority to use the fees for the intentions in this bill under their appropriation authority.
Madam Chair, it's my understanding they do, but perhaps, Mr. Gustaf is saying no.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, the health licensing boards are fee collecting, but their fees are what are referred to as non-dedicated revenue to the state government special revenue fund. The appropriation or the spending authority for each of those boards is set every 2 years in the biennial budget through the direct appropriation in the Health and Human Services bill. And so right now, without the ability to spend the fees they're collecting, or without additional fee authority that is dedicated to them, the boards would need to carry out the requirements of this law with their existing appropriation that was enacted last year.
So, Mr. Gustafson, you're saying that they couldn't tap the reserves without additional authority?
Madam Chair, that's correct, that without increasing the appropriation that the legislature made to the boards, they are restricted in their spending authority for the current biennium by the appropriation law.
Madam Chair, Senator Mr. Bond. Gustafson, if you look on page 6 in the section around fees collected, so it seems to me, and I know there's another provision in the bill where we make it clear that the OET surcharge can still be used. So it seems as though either in that provision within the bill or in this section, could we just add language allowing them to use their existing fees for the implementation of the provisions in this bill?
Mr. Gustafson.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, it's certainly the prerogative of the legislature to delegate the spending of existing fees. I was trying to point out, under current law, the spending authority for the boards has been limited by the direct appropriation from the legislature. And so while that's an option, that would be a significant departure from the current budget structure for the boards.
Senator Bonoff, this is something that probably does have to be determined if they're going to need the additional funds from their reserves. And I don't know if they can come up with an exact amount that we'd want to put in that would be an additional appropriation from their own funds, or how we would like to do it.
Madam Chair, could I work with them between now and the floor and be prepared?
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Olson,
it would also be helpful to know if a legislative auditor or whoever makes contact with the organization that might require some remuneration in a contract to do it. That's what that $45,000 is intended to cover.
Right.
And maybe it's not needed, maybe it is. If there's any way of narrowing or focusing what that actual cost would be, that could solve our problem as well.
Yep. Mr. Hubinger, although Senator Olson, that's separate from this other issue that we're talking about.
Well, Madam Chair, I thought the it was whether we could use the $45,000 could come out of the fee surplus, and that $45,000 was for the costs of the legislative audit.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the amendment that I don't think we have we voted? We haven't voted on the amendment yet.
Yes, we voted.
Oh, did we? All right. We've got that on there, which is for conducting that special investigation. And as we've heard from the legislative auditor, they are not going to incur additional costs, but may, because of the requirement to work through this organization of state health board fee structure practices or whatever it is, that there might be some costs there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could find out whether there is some cost associated with it, that could narrow this whole thing down. And if there isn't, which would be nice, then we wouldn't have to worry about the language change in the bill.
Okay. Senator Brown. Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Ian, you may all have covered this before I got here this morning.
You did.
But my question is the sentence that says the legislature must not transfer money generated from these fees to the general fund. What makes the health licensing boards different from the fire safety account and all those other accounts that we've drained over the years? I mean, I can just see that every board will come in next year with a bill with that sentence in it, you know, if we do this. And maybe you all talked about this, and you can just tell me to shut up. But
Senator Higgins, we did have some discussion about it. This is only at this point, you're right, it's the health-related boards. We did take some ongoing money last year that had started, but we have been trying to pull back on draining reserve funds for these special entities. And you're right, as each of these are reviewed and as their reserve funds are looked at, the direction they gave is that they're supposed to tie their fees closely to their service, and if they have to adjust their fees, then they should move forward and do that so we don't have big reserve funds sitting around. And so you're right, it's duly noted. It's something we're working on and would like to continue to work on and move forward with is making sure those reserve funds are proper amounts, because that we're not charging too much. And then the legislature's tempted to raid them.
Yeah, because that's what we do.
I know. It's been done in the past quite a bit. Senator Magnus.
Well, Madam Chair, Section 11 is a problem in my mind. I'm struggling with how much money they have and how much they need. Their ongoing efforts, what their plans are in the future, and the notion that we don't look at it for another 12 years I've got some questions about that.
Well, and Senator Magnus, I think as Senator Cohen pointed out, committees are free to look at these anytime, and we actually do look at the budgets every 2 years. Absolutely, when we're doing our appropriations bills. And so this is an extra special oversight.
Yeah.
And they spent a lot of time. They called everybody in, probably spent a meeting or two with each different organization, which is, you know, it happens here too if you count the House and the Senate, I suppose, but it's the same people really digging in and understanding the issues of each of these commissions and boards. And so, Senator Bonoff.
Yep, yeah. Madam Chair, and Senator Magnus, I would also point you on the 824 amendment to the Section 23, the Board of Medical Practice Review. So even though we wouldn't, as a Sunset Commission, be reviewing them, in fact, we are going to do an extra interim review after the legislative auditor looks at that. And one of the things the legislative auditor will look at is their fee structure. And we did flag that. And, in fact, you'll see in the House companion, they actually say that all fees must be reduced by a certain amount. And we did not put that in our bill because we've directed them to come back to us with a recommendation, and that will go through their committees. But we don't think it's appropriate to carry those kind of reserves. On the other hand, the fees generated in that reserve fund are coming from those who are requesting oversight, regulation, and licensing, and we don't think it has integrity to be continuing to use those to balance our budget.
Senator Cohen?
Madam Chair, just a couple things. First of all, maybe, as you suggest, this was an extra special oversight. Maybe that's what the committee should be renamed, as opposed to Sunset Commission, since apparently more of the activity is spent on various kinds of oversight issues than sunsetting. But I wanted to inquire of Senator Hahn, if I could. And Senator Hahn, I know that you weren't in the room, I don't believe, but I'm struck in this bill where there are a host of sections that deal with regulatory issues in terms of the health boards. And as Senator Bonoff pointed out, a lot of this came as a consequence of the series or articles in the Star Trib about some of the problems or lack of oversight. Is this an issue that your committee was going to look at or thought about looking at, or did you defer to the Sunset Commission because you were too busy?
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, this bill was in our committee, and we did have some discussion about those issues, but we had not had separate bills in our committee this year on that issue. No, we have not.
So, Senator Chair, my Cohen. Question is, why did your committee defer?
Senator it, Cohen, can you move up a little?
I'm sorry. Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, my question is, why did your committee defer its jurisdiction to this sunset crowd instead of doing it within your committee?
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, I don't know that I would say that we deferred our authority to the sunset crowd. As I understand it, as the Sunset Commission was working through their recommendations, because this came up, they decided to try to address it in their bill. And there were, frankly, questions that were raised about what kind of information ought to be reported and how, and there were some things that it seemed to me that the Sunset Commission decided to act on it just because there was that notice that came up that created some concern, and they tried to address it.
Okay. Are there any other questions or anyone who wants to testify for or against the bill?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, one last thing. I was given a note that said that the reason for the absence of the health licensing boards is the executive directors are meeting, so I will follow up with them with regard to the questions raised and let you know.
Thank you. Do you have a motion?
I move the Senate File 2304 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
Senator Bonoff, yeah, let's go back to rules because yes. of the legislative members being named to the commission. And the bill is as amended. So, Senator Cohen, before
I'm sure. One more comment relative to just the concept of this whole thing. And I suppose there's nothing worse than a politician and or a legislator referring back to his or her good old days. But I'm going to do so. When I was first a finance chairman in this place, X number of years ago, and I was chairman of state departments, which was at that time about 2.5 times what the present committee is. It had jurisdiction over, we only had a handful of finance committees. And what we did is we adopted sunset legislation for all of the agencies within the committee's jurisdiction, the division's jurisdiction. And again, those were a lot of agencies. And most of the large agencies, excluding, I think, Health, Human Services, Public Safety, a couple of others. And we undertook an exhaustive sunset study of all the agencies within the jurisdiction of the committee. We did so over a 2-year period. We used the interim period to do so. We used existing staff to do so who worked for the committee. And we did a variety of things. And some of that was adopted by, this was during the time Governor Carlson was in office, and we worked with the administration, and the administration adopted some of what was recommended. We didn't have to set up another extrajudicial commission to do it. We did it within the existing committee structure, and we actually got something done, and we actually got something done in a substantive way. And some of the things that occurred through that continue to the present day. Some do not.
Senator Cohen, how many boards or commissions did you sunset?
We didn't sunset anything, as we recall. We combined some agencies. We reduced appropriations for agencies. And we looked at, in a very careful way, the cause and effect of FTEs versus what their positions were to do, what they were doing, et cetera. And it was pretty exhaustive. And the end result was absolutely some significant efficiencies within the operations of those agencies. And like I said, some of that continues to the present day.
Thank you for that history lesson. I think we're ready to move on Senator Bonoff's motion that Senate File 2304, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Rules Committee. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
No.
Ah. Division. All in favor, please raise your hand. Okay. Opposed? On a vote of 7-5, the motion does prevail. The bill will be sent to the Rules Committee. Thank you, Senator Bonnoff.
Thank you.
Next up, do we have Senator Kreif? I saw him coming in and out. There he is. Senator DeKreif will present Senate File 1597 relating to veterans' preferences.
No one convinced me.
Voted for it, though.
Yeah.
I'm confused.
That's amazing.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Senator DeKreif.
Madam Chair, Senate File 1597 is about veterans' hiring preferences. We've all become aware of challenges that veterans, especially 9/11 veterans, are facing in finding work. I'll spare you the details, but suffice it to say vets need work, and we're trying to find ways to get them employed. Senate File 1597 includes a number of initiatives to help veterans get back to work, and this bill has been heard in other committees, and portions have already been passed off the Senate floor. Article 1, the USERA preference points recruiting, just as an example. Today I focus on the provisions that potentially impact the finances of the state. Article 2, the veterans' preference in procurement, is currently up to 6%. I increased that number to 8%. It remains discretionary up to that number, and this must be no less than any other targeted group, as noted in current law. Article 3, my bill separates and strengthens a veteran's preference for DOT contracting. I pull veterans from the broader class of businesses who receive set-asides in contracting and create a new section dealing specifically with veterans. The commissioner has some discretion as to the percentage, up to 6%, but is compelled to award some preference, not less than that afforded to other targeted groups. Again, this is similar to current law as it applies to procurement. The administration has mechanisms in place to implement the current set-aside law, so the fiscal impact should be limited. As far as implications in the value of contracts awarded, the administration caps total liability to rule by rule. I don't speak to that practice in this bill, so that wouldn't necessarily change at all. In Article 4, also authorizes counties to establish preference programs, but do not mandate their creation, so it would help the counties to decide their policies. So these are the pieces I would expect to be of most interest to this community or to this committee, and I stand for questions.
Members, are there questions for Senator DeKreif? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, Section 3, maybe just a real quick history lesson there from yourself or your testifier with regards to non-disabled veterans credits, from increasing it from 5 to 10 points. And the question is, not that you're raising it, the question is a veteran able to utilize those credits numerous times? How many times can he use it? Can he use it all the time throughout their whole life when they're applying for jobs? Can he use it just once? I think at one time there was and I can't imagine how they even kept track of that, but they could only use that veteran's preference one time. Am I going way back too far that people can't even remember?
Madam Kaiser?
Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, my name is Jerry Kaiser. I am a combat disabled Vietnam veteran and the vice chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council that represents the 381,000 veterans and National Guardsmen and reservists, 17,000. So we've been working on this for a number of years. Every contract that you can, there is a set aside for of up to 6% for state contracts. 80% of the of the MnDOT contracts are for the federal contracts, and veterans are not don't get any kind of preference or set aside on those at all. So we're only talking about less than maybe 20% of the state contracts that are out there that have no federal money into it. Because if you use federal money, there's a dollar of federal money in a state contract, you have to go by the federal rules. Veterans are not considered socially disabled or disadvantaged as some of the targeted groups are. So that's consequently, we're just talking about a smaller portion of just state contracts that they're able to get this 6% up to 6% set aside in the, and only in the bidding. And I believe it's for any one of the contracts that they're going to do. It's not just once a year or one time. Does that answer your question, sir?
I think so.
Mr. Kaiser, what is do the federal government give any preference points in the hiring process? And if so, what type of points do they offer?
Well, they don't. There's not really points in a federal contract. There's a what's the term? The term is that there's a goal of minority disadvantaged business enterprises to be able to get state contracts, but there's no goal for veterans in those federal contracts, basically because right now you have to go by the federal rules. But this particular legislation doesn't have anything to do with the federal stuff. Only pertains to the state contracts that have no federal money in it. And that's what we're talking about here. So that's about 20% of the state's MnDOT contracts.
Mr. Kaiser, could you tell me, I don't know how many points people normally would accumulate in a hiring process. So going up an extra 5 points, and they already, in some cases, they have 5, now they're going to 10. In the case of disabled veterans, going from 10 to 15.
Okay, that's another. We're talking two different things here. One is in the hiring preference. I'm talking about MnDOT contracts.
In the contracts.
And I the preferences are within state hiring processes. That is true. But there is no I don't know if there's a study about how many veterans have been affected with that anyway.
See, Madam Chair.
Senator DeCrive.
I just wanted to let you know, too, the federal guidelines and the state guidelines have been the same, where a non-disabled veteran was getting 5 points and a disabled veteran was getting 10. What we're doing in Minnesota in this bill is we're increasing for non-disabled veterans from 5 to 10 points and disabled veterans from 10 to 15 points. Now, just to further clarify, a veteran would still have to pass the test and be a qualified candidate. They would still have to pass with a passing score of 70. So if they passed with that minimum score of 70, a disabled veteran would receive an additional 15 points to give them a little bit better chance of getting hired.
And so then they'd have 85, but if they passed with an 80 already.
If they passed with an 80, they would get another 15 points on top of that.
Okay. Senator Higgins, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, Senator DeCrive, I see that in one place you have changed the percentage of preference in Article 2. I see. You've changed it from 6 to 8%, but only in that one article. The rest of them have it all at 6%, and it's not increased. Was that what you meant to do?
Senator DeCrive?
That's in the part of veteran-owned small businesses.
Right.
And essentially what we're doing there is we're just asking, this is a different part than we've been talking about here. This is a
It's for purchasing from veteran-owned right. small businesses.
Yes.
Right.
The other section is for
hiring.
Setting. Well, one section is for hiring, and then the Article 3 is for those who are entering into contracts with the state. And you're saying that the one for the contracts in particular doesn't increase the preference.
I'm saying, Madam Chair, that in one place it was increased from 6% to 8% preference. And I was asking Senator DeCryf if that was deliberate to have it just in the one place or whether he meant to do it in all the articles.
No, that was deliberate.
Are there any other questions? I understand that we have a fiscal note that the Department of Transportation says that going through these preferences may cause them some additional work, although they're already doing them. This is mainly increasing them, is my understanding. But if it is done by MnDOT, it comes out of the Trunk Highway Fund and their staffing projected at approximately $103,000. So I'm just, have you talked about this? Did this go through transportation, or where did this also pass through?
Yes, it has. It has passed through transportation.
Mr. Kaiser,
maybe Jerry would want to comment on this.
Yes, ma'am. The way that the veteran-owned small businesses are vetted is through the Veterans Administration. The reason why we did that is that it was going to incur cost on the MnDOT to check out whether a veteran-owned business has had the proper DD 214, was a 51% owned by it, and had proper finances. That is done by the Veterans Administration itself, and then you become a vetted small business or service-disabled small business, and that is the standard. That way, then, the state of Minnesota doesn't have to recertify them again after the Veterans Administration does that. That's supposed to have cut the cost there. Department of the MnDOT had a gentleman who was doing that in the and I believe that he is no longer with them, and consequently he was helping us trying to find veteran-owned businesses that could bid on these contracts, and that's part of the funding that they're looking to get that position filled again, and an additional, I guess, another half a person to do that.
Mr. Kaiser, you know, every county has a veteran service office. Can you also work through them to they have a lot of contact with veterans and get word out through them, maybe without having to hire a recruiter, so to speak?
Well, that's in fact what they have done. The MnDOT had set aside $50,000 for a contract person to find more veteran-owned businesses that are certified by the VA and get them certified, because right now there's not a very many that they can actually pick from that can bid on these contracts that are certified by the VA. And so that was the process of them doing that, and we're very grateful for them for getting that contract out, and they have a person now who is searching that out. County veteran service officers are overburdened with all the things. They don't really know the requirements for this vetting process, and it is difficult to go through its paperwork, and it has to be done every year.
Thank you. Is there anyone who wants to testify for or against the bill? Senator Stump?
thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question about the effective dates. They're effective July 1st of 2012 this year. Does that work with, or what kind of processing needs to take place before that or what kind of confusion, I guess maybe would be a better question, is once this would pass, would bids be submitted or kind of in between, you know, that I'm just trying to get a kind of a mental picture as to how this would actually kind of flow into action.
Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Stump. Basically, the companies that are already vetted, they're ready to go, and they can start. They can quote on these projects now and bid on these projects. But we're hoping to get more veteran-owned businesses into play, so we get more of them obtaining these jobs.
Senator Stump.
Madam Chair, you don't see any problem then with the July 1st effective date. That's adequate time for...
Well, I think so, because we're basically already doing this work, and there are some businesses already there. We're just going to have to start gearing up for more, hopefully.
All right. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Is there anyone who wants to testify? Department of Transportation, are they? Okay, Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair and Senator Kreif, is there a local impact note, fiscal note, in terms of directing the local jurisdictions to create this?
Senator Kreif?
Not to my knowledge.
Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, if you'd like to have somebody move the bill, I would be happy to do that.
Okay.
Move that Senate File 1597 be recommended to pass. We amended it.
Senator Cohen?
Madam Chair, just a comment, not to oppose the bill, because the bill, as I understand it, Senator Kreif, continues a lot of what's in place in terms of the caps and so on. But I've been skimming the preliminary fiscal note, and it does suggest that if we continue on this road, there might be significant costs. You know, if we were to carry this to a logical end, if you had no cap with the 8%, the preliminary note suggests an additional cost of almost $28 million. And I think even with this change, it's still a million plus or so. And maybe not unwise to do, but you know, we should just keep in mind and be a little bit careful when we start removing some of the caps we have in place, because then it might get a little bit pricey.
Senator Kreif.
I really don't understand what the question was.
And Senator Cohen, the fiscal note today is for $103,000.
I understand, Madam Chair, but I'm looking at the preliminary fiscal note that talks about what might be, if you carried this further, at some subsequent date, not what's in the bill right now, but in terms of what might happen, because I recognize the note we have in front of us is significantly less, but if you carried this to a logical extreme, I'm not suggesting Senator Kreif is suggesting that, but if you did so, you might end up with some real significant costs. So that's the only comment. It's not to oppose the bill, but just to make sure members understand where you could possibly go down the road with this. I'm not suggesting that's in the bill right now.
And so if it's not in the bill, then we won't have to discuss it. Could you identify yourself, please?
Good morning. My name is Mary Preska. I'm a director of civil rights for MnDOT, and I administer the veterans program that's going on in MnDOT right now. And I thought I'd just clarify, if I could, Madam Chair, the fiscal note going forward. The fiscal note, my understanding of this bill, it opens up the professional technical side of veterans contracting. MnDOT currently runs a 6% preference program on a construction side of the state-funded construction program. This bill allows us to open up the professional technical side. Therefore, the fiscal note is to the first year to get the program up and running with the incentives and disincentives piece and the programmatic pieces, and a one staff position years after that to run that professional technical side of all our contracting.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? If not, Senator Olson has moved that Senate File 1597 be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be placed on general orders. Senator Kreif, you may as well stay there and begin explaining your next bill to us, which is Senate File 1698.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 1698 is a bill that the County Transportation Streamlining Bill, and it's an initiative brought forth by the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota County Engineers Association, with three provisions that would expedite transportation project completion. Sections 1 through 5 allow MnDOT State Aid Office to be exempt from the rulemaking required under Chapter 14. Sections 6 through 8 remove the sunset of overweight fees from timber and raw egg agriculture product haulers to be dedicated to local bridge inspection and weight limit posting. And in Section 9, this section requires the state water permitting agencies to confer with local road aid authorities to identify opportunities to streamline the water permitting process, including consideration of single-point issuance of system for water, state water permits as they relate to transportation projects. And, Madam Chair, I do have a representative from the Association of Minnesota Counties that can maybe explain in a little bit more detail.
Senator Kreif, you also have an amendment. Did you want to offer that and get it on the bill? I think it has to do with changing the effective date.
I don't have a copy of the amendment here, actually.
It will be distributed.
How did that get turned on?
It sounded like a birds movie.
Madam Chair, she claims that's the sound of a loon.
Oh. That's the truth.
Those cell phones have interesting rings, ringtones.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I would move the A4 amendment to Senate File 1698. So up for discussion.
Senator DeKreit, any explanation on the change?
Yeah, what the A4 amendment does, Madam Chair, is it really gets us in line with the House with our with the dates of implementation, and just gets our effective dates in line.
Any questions? If not, all in favor of Senator Olson's motion on the A4 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. If you would like to go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Abby Breidach. I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. And I just want to say a couple words about the fiscal note. We worked with the agencies affected by our bill to make sure that we're all on the same page as far as what the understanding, the expectations were, especially for the water permitting study. And consequently, the PCA cut their note in half. Their costs are reflected for staff time for doing this study. MnDOT reflects some of those costs as well, but you also see there's some there are some cost savings for exempting the MnDOT state aid for that rulemaking process. And the Bowser and DNR have some small costs, but they've said that they could absorb them. And so there are no general fund costs here, just mostly some staff time that will be reflected in the Trunk Highway Fund and the Environmental Fund.
Do any members have questions about the fiscal note? As she said, there's no money coming out of the general fund, but it's coming from the Trunk Highway Fund, basically. Any questions? Senator Olson moves that Senate file. Well, first I should ask, is there anyone else here who wants to testify for or against it? If not, on Senator Olson's motion that Senate File 1698 be recommended to pass
as amended,
and placed on general orders. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be placed on general orders.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Senator Magnus.
You spent $16,000.
Members,
Senator Roebling,
I would like to take off the table a bill that we laid there a couple weeks ago, Senate File 2121, and recommended for passage. It is the bill that relates to the unofficial fiscal notes for the that are put together for us and concerning the how they would be handled as private data until or unless a bill was introduced or an amendment was offered related to that specific fiscal note or at the release of the author or the requester, of course. This was recommended by the legislative auditor in the report they did for us on fiscal notes. I laid it on the table because there was a data privacy bill that I thought was moving that we could just put it on as an amendment, wouldn't have to travel on its own. It's not working out, so I think we need to just send it to the floor on its,
okay,
on its
Senator,
own.
Senator Roebling moves to take Senate File 2121 from the table. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, the bill is before us, Senator Roebling. Senator Hand.
Chair, I just was wondering if, Senator Roebling, does this bill have a fiscal note to it?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, no, it does not. It's simply a policy change on data privacy or classification of information. It's already being generated. So it's good.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was also an amendment in the packet, A2 amendment.
Oh, I think.
Senator Roebling, I think that was adopted last time.
It was adopted last time.
When
so
we put it in. So
it should already be attached to the bill.
All right.
If there's no other questions, I would move that Senate File 2121 as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on general orders.
Senator Roebling moves that Senate File 2121 as amended be passed and sent to the general, sent to the floor in general orders. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion passes. You're on the way, Senator.
Thank you, members.
Oh, 1921.
The next bill I have up is Senate File 1921, and I would like to start by offering the A1 amendment.
All right. Senator Roebling places 1971 before us and 1921, excuse me. Everyone have the amendment? Everyone have the A1 amendment before you?
No.
Delete all?
No.
Oh, 4 minutes.
We're just getting it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Here's a fiscal note.
Senator Roebling has moved the A1 amendment to delete all amendment to Senate File 1921. All those in favor of the amendment?
Well, I think I better explain
it better
first. members, and I, what this amendment does is one thing it does address is the fiscal note, because before we were asking the department, the bill is about abortion clinic licensing and regulation. And before we were asking the Department of Health to develop new rules for that purpose. And so we had a fiscal note of like $258,000 for rulemaking. And so as we were moving through various committees with the bill, I kept saying that it was not my intention to reinvent the wheel, but that we would not need a major rule probably because we could pattern it after the current ambulatory surgical centers and the rules that they have that oversee them. Well, finally, we looked at the rules closely enough, and we decided that, indeed, they could be using the same rule. And so what we're proposing here in the amendment is that they would be treated with, they would fall under that same rule. So the clinics would be inspected and regulated in the same manner that the surgical centers, which are freestanding centers, are regulated and licensed. And so in addition, when we put in the licensure fee, we had a blank appropriation or blank fee amount there before, and we have picked up on the fee that is currently charged to the ambulatory surgical centers, $3,712. And even though I don't know, the original fiscal note indicated that the ongoing costs of inspections and regulation might be more than that, I'm struggling to understand why it would be more than it would cost to review and regulate the abortion clinics than it would for the surgical centers, since we're asking them to fall under the same rule. And so that is the fee that we have decided to place on them for their license. And there's a few other changes in here. There was nothing in the previous bill that had any consequence for operating without a license, and so there's a section in here, section B here, relates to that, and I believe that's the same language that is taken out of current statute related to if a surgical center operates without, but there may be, I think the Commissioner of Health, the Attorney General, and appropriate county attorney, and here it says, or a woman upon whom an abortion has been performed could report them. And if they are operating without a license, they could seek an injunction. But if they have a license and everything is in order, then there would not be any consequences to the clinic. We also have in here that the inspections could not occur more than 2 times per year, because in hearing from some people with concerns about possible harassment of the clinics, we wanted to make sure that they weren't going in there repeatedly and doing more than they needed to do, or that was normal for the other surgical centers as well. And that's pretty much the changes that we've included. I think the hearing in case of a suspension is some new language, but again, that is language that is similar to the surgical center's language. And so We're trying to put together a reasonable product here, that because of the belief that many of us have that the clinics should have some oversight and regulation, but we are not trying to over-regulate and overcharge, and we're just trying to treat them like another center that we believe is very, very similar to them. And I know one of the issues that was raised as I talked to Connie Perpich from Planned Parenthood, as she was concerned about if the rules were too restrictive, if their facilities might not comply with the rules. And there actually is in the rules waivers for things like physical size of a hallway, some of those things that are in here. But anything that has already existed and doesn't cause a safety threat to patients can get a waiver for those. And so I think that the rules do address that issue fairly well. And in other words, the ones that are already there, unless there's truly a safety risk to patients in the clinic, would be grandfathered in the current facilities. We think there's about 8 clinics that meet the definition of what we're asking for here. It's those centers, health centers or clinics that would perform more than 10 abortions a month, I'm sorry. And so there's right now, I believe, 8 such facilities in the state. And so that is pretty much what the amendment does. And we've had the bill before the Health Committee, the Judiciary Committee, and the State Government Committee. And this is our last stop, hopefully, before going to the floor.
All right, Senator Goodwin. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to make sure now, and I do think you said it right, and I hope I'm reading it right, that the license for the abortion clinics is the same amount as the license for the ambulatory surgical centers at $3,712 instead of the $16,000 or whatever that was in the former fiscal note. So that's correct, right?
That's correct. Mr. Chair. It's the outpatient surgical centers, and it's my understanding from their website at least that the licensing fee is $37.12.
Senator Goodwin.
Follow-up questions, Mr. Chair. So how does that compare with other health licensing, the costs?
Senator Roebling.
Senator Goodwin and members, I don't know what the hospitals are charged and the nursing homes. Of course, they're much higher. As you may know, I know you've been on several committee hearings on this, we currently do not license standard doctor's clinics, and so they don't have a fee currently. But we are putting this in the class as outpatient surgical centers, and that's why we're just using the same fee for them.
And just
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I see that $63,000 is appropriated in 2013 from the state government special revenue fund. What state government special revenue fund is it coming from?
Senator Roebling?
I am not sure if we've taken care of that issue.
I think Mr. Gustafson might.
Mr. Gustafson.
Madam Chair, Senator Goodwin, the State Government Special Revenue Fund is a fund that from which there are a variety of classes of fees and appropriations. And the bill we dealt with earlier on the sunset review is also fees and appropriations from the State Government Special Revenue Fund. And so there are separations within that fund based on the type of fees and the agencies from which or for which appropriations are made. This would come from the class within that fund that collects fees and appropriates to the Department of Health and the Department of Human Services. The portion of that fund we discussed earlier with regard to the health licensing boards is a separate subset within that fund. So this would be the portion from which the fees collected by the Departments of Health and DHS are deposited, and the portion from which their appropriations are made for their licensing activities.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Goodwin.
Follow-up question to Mr. Gustafson. There are several special revenue funds. Shouldn't this name the special revenue fund that the fund is coming from?
Mr. Gustafson.
Madam Chair, Senator Goodwin, you're absolutely correct. There are, I'd make a distinction, there is the Special Revenue Fund, which is a collection of accounts that which there are dozens of accounts or perhaps even north of 100 accounts where a specific fee is collected or a specific resource is the revenue, and typically those revenues are appropriated to the agency. The State Government Special Revenue Fund is a different fund entirely. There are fees collected, and the distinct from many special revenue accounts, the State Government Special Revenue Fund, as we discussed earlier, has direct appropriations. We typically do not in statute allow the agency to spend what they collect. Instead, the money comes in, is collected in that fund, and then the legislature makes appropriations decisions every biennium how much to appropriate. But to your more direct question, the appropriation laws have tended not to specify the distinct parts within that fund. It's more a matter of how the accounting system and Minnesota Management and Budget separates the receipts and the appropriation. So we have not done so within the appropriation law, but rather through the accounting practices of the state.
So,
Senator Goodwin.
I do have on this amendment some questions, but So do we know how much is in that special revenue fund right now or what this will do to that fund?
Mr. Gustafson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, based on the February forecast, that subset that is related to the MDH and DHS fees and appropriations has a projected balance at the end of fiscal 13 of
$811,000. $811,000. Okay, thank you. And one final thing, are we going to ask
Senator
to see
Goodwin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we going to ask if somebody wants to testify on this amendment because it has changed things?
Well, just to the previous point, Senator Goodwin, we're taking in a license fee, right, Senator?
That's Rolling, correct,
and
Mr.
that's
Chair.
Deposited in these accounts. One of these accounts, then, and that offsets the sum of the $63,000 you're taking back out. Is that a correct assumption, Senator Roebling?
That's correct. That,
yeah. All right. So that's.
So do we have any testifiers?
We'll call testifiers up in a moment, or we have other senators with questions, and then we'll call testifiers up.
Flip a coin.
Senator Von Hoff, I think you're
Mr. Chair, I do have one other amendment that I'd like incorporated into this before moving forward.
Okay.
On line 1.8, it says, including non-surgical abortions, and I would like that deleted from the bill because we are talking about comparing it to the outpatient surgical center, so we can remove the non-surgical abortions from the bill. So this would be the ones that are done with medication and not through a procedure.
Okay.
And the comma before it.
Council wishes to repeat the oral amendment from Senator Roebling to her amendment.
Mr. Chair, is she just incorporating it?
Or we could take a vote. I don't care.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think it makes sense for Senator Roebling to incorporate it and just restating it so everyone has it. On page 1, line 7, delete the comma, and on page 1, line 8, delete everything before shall.
Okay. Members, we're just trying to make this as reasonable as we can and as comparable to the outpatient surgical centers.
All right. Senator Roebling, or Senator Bonhoff, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Roebling, could you just shed some light on what brought about this bill? Was there a concern? Had something happened? How did this come to be? What was the problem that this is responding to?
Senator Bonhoff, I remember a long time ago, and I was still in high school, actually, when the Supreme Court legalized abortions. And one of the purposes was because they wanted to get it out of the back rooms where they considered it to be very dangerous and into the daylight. And quite frankly, there isn't much light being, shine on the current facilities because we don't have any oversight or regulation or licensing. And I'm not saying that we've had any serious problems in Minnesota, but that hasn't been the case necessarily around the country. And in order to make sure that the proper conditions are being met in these clinics and facilities, including the safety of the patient who is going in for the procedure, I think that it's important to have this kind of oversight. And, sometimes I compare it to my issue with trying to get a fence around the Shakopee Women's Prison. There hasn't been any bad incident for some time, but if you don't take some precautionary measures, sometimes you're looking for trouble. And so I don't think we should be looking for any trouble here, and I think this is a fairly simple way to provide some oversight and licensing to give some assurance that everything is operating okay.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Roebling, I got stuck on paragraph 5 at the top of page 2, starting on line 2.4. And frankly, whatever you're trying to say there makes absolutely no sense. So there's either words missing or too many words in there or too many phrases stuck in the middle of other things. But what are you trying to say here because you're not saying it in the bill?
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Higgins, you're right. That sentence is a little fragmented. I think because of the references to the various sections, it makes it a little more confusing. And it has to do with patterns of conduct for the physicians and their economic interests in the facilities. Could I refer to my testifier, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andrea Rao, and I represent MCCL, Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. That language was taken, with the exception of the word facility, which I believe used to read hospital and outpatient surgical centers. That is taken directly from Statute 144.55, Subdivision 6. And the language should read exactly as it does there, like I said, except for that reference to facility. Not that that necessarily means that statute was written perfectly, but that is where it came from. It's not new to this legislation.
What does it mean it's right?
Like I said.
What's it supposed to say? What's it supposed to guard against? Mr. Chair. Ms. Rao.
Senator Higgins. Yeah.
It doesn't say anything. Can you at least tell us what you're trying to prevent or guard against?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, my understanding, and I don't pretend to be an expert in this area necessarily. I just we took this language based on what they had for hospitals and outpatient surgical centers and figured if it was working perfectly there, then that's what we want here. But my understanding is what that is related to, and specifically 144.6521 that it references, is for if a doctor is treating a patient and they have a financial interest in another facility that they may be transferring or providing a referral to that patient for. For example, if a doctor has a financial interest in a nursing home. Yeah. Something like that. They have to notify the patient prior of that financial interest when they make the referral.
Yeah, okay, Mr. Chair, somebody needs to rewrite this then because this is pitifully inadequate.
We're working on it, Senator Higgins, and we'll have counsel.
All right. I'll go to my next thing then, if
Senator
I may.
Higgins.
Subdivision 6 on the page 2 is the traditional severability clause that we see on all abortion bills. But this isn't an abortion bill. This is a licensing bill. And I see no reason to put it in this bill. So I'm going to move to delete that. I understand that in other cases there was, maybe some reason for that. But it's just, I think, an unacceptable thing to put in a licensure bill, in the licensure statutes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
We had extensive discussion on this in the Judiciary Committee, and I do believe it has a purpose in the bill, and I would not want to see it removed.
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, that just means that you think you have a problem with your bill. And that's if so, we should just, kill the bill now. you should be writing a bill in such a way that you don't need to put in this bogus sentence that says that, gee, if there's a problem with it, all the rest of it's okay. That's just flagging it that there's a problem with it. And, if you haven't written it in a way that is constitutional, then so be it. It all gets tossed. But it's all a single subject. It's all about licensure. And if you can't figure out how to write a constitutional licensure provision, then we're in deep trouble around here.
Senator Higgins, you're moving to delete section or subdivision 6. Is that your motion?
Yes, from 2.19 to 2.25.
2.19, 2.25. Any further discussion? Ms. Rao?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we believe that this bill is written as it is constitutional. But because of the unpredictability of the courts at times on the issues related to abortion, we would prefer that the language remain in.
Further discussion. Senator Higgins has a motion to delete lines 2.19 through 2.25. Is that correct, Senator? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
No.
Motion fails. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to comment on Senator Bonhoeff's question about where the bill has come from, and I just wanted to relate to the committee that last year in the Health and Human Services Committee, one of the earlier meetings we had with the Commissioner of Health, and he was talking about the duties of the Department of Health and things that they do, and there were questions about inspection of various medical facilities, and the issue of inspection of abortion facilities did come up in that hearing, and at that point it may have been because he was relatively new, but he was not sure exactly what regimen was being used to do inspections of abortion facilities at all. It was just he was not clear if there was inspections or if there wasn't or who was doing it or what period, and so we did ask the commissioner to come back and fill in the blanks and tell us a little bit about what was going on. They did do that. The department did do that earlier this year, and in the course of that hearing, what they indicated is that there is no inspections at all done of any abortion facility, and that I did not know at that time, last year in particular, that this was a bill that was being contemplated, but I was certainly intending to introduce something like this on my own, just because I think that when you're talking about a procedure that is serious, that you want to make sure that there's a certain level of confidence that there are no problems. And part of the concern last year was related to the horrific incident that occurred in, I think it was in Pennsylvania, with respect to a clinic that had not been inspected for some period of time, and it was just a charnel house. And nothing like that, as Senator Roebling has indicated, has occurred in Minnesota. But unless we do something to at least assure that there's a comparable level of inspection that we hold to other similar kinds of clinics, you'd have to rely on a complaint after the fact before you would discover any potential problem. And so we felt that this was a reasonable approach to try to make the inspection regimen very similar to what we see with ambulatory surgery centers or other kinds of clinics of a comparable size and purpose.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Senator Hand. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 2, the clause 5 that was that Senator Higgins mentioned, I believe there was some legislation that we passed relating to conflict of interest for radiological centers, or I wonder if that wouldn't apply or could be used here too. I think I can't remember who authored that bill, but I remember that there was a provision in there for relating to a conflict. That might be able to resurrect that language.
Well, Senator Stump, Senator Mr. Bodern has got some language to suggestions on some language that to Senator Higgins talked about earlier. Mr. Bodern.
Mr. Chairman, I think this will make it a little easier to understand Clause 5. On page 2, line 4, delete everything after paren 5, close paren. And then on page 2, line 5, before the first A at the beginning of the sentence there, insert if there is, and after that, insert involves, and after physicians, insert in the facility. And then on page 2, line 6, after and, insert who. And on page 2, line 7, the cross-reference needs to be corrected. That should be delete 144.6512 and insert 144.6521. So the new clause would read, reading it together with the first part of the sentence in subdivision 4, the Commissioner of Health may refuse to grant or renew or may suspend or revoke a license on any of the following grounds. Clause 5. If there is a pattern of conduct that involves one or more physicians in the facility who have a financial or economic interest in the facility as defined and who have not provided notice and disclosure of the financial or economic interest as required by section 144.6521.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Do we need to have the phrase as defined in Section 144.6521 twice in that same sentence? Is there a way to further pare that down?
Mr. Bodden?
For instance, does the subdivision 3 reference in 2.6 also deal with the section that's referenced in 2.7? I mean, it's the same subdivision.
Right. Mr. Chairman and Senator Higgins, I think there are two things happening here. Sub 3 provides the definition of financial or economic interest, and then there is a requirement for disclosure. There's basically a process for that disclosure. So this sentence is referencing each of those things.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Bodden, should the second reference then also include a subdivision number?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Higgins, subdivision 1 appears to provide the disclosure. I'm looking at 144.6521 kind of off the cuff here, and I just want to make sure that I think both subdivisions 1 and 2 may relate to disclosure. I just, at this point, I think if you refer to the entire section, it works better. I don't know that any interest is served by making it more specific in the second reference.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I would incorporate Mr. Bodden's preferred language into my amendment.
I think it makes it a lot clearer, Senator Roebling. All right. Any further discussion?
Yes, sir, Chair.
Senator Senator Higgins.
Higgins first.
never mind.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Han, I was wondering if you have done anything to take this type of language and address this same provision to other areas of medical practice. In particular, the one I'm wondering about is doctors who refer, orthopedics who refer to physical therapy rehab centers. I think that that's a pretty pervasive occurrence where those orthopedics actually do have a monetary and financial interest in those sports rehab facilities, and I'm not trying to hijack this bill. I'm not offering an amendment, but I would say on the record I think that it's a pretty serious issue and would ask if you look at other things you have moving this session, if you might consider the language that's being drafted here as something that you would consider including.
Senator Han.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Bonhoeff. I'm not sure how to which facilities or professions this language does apply. I know there are some. We do have some concern, for example, about radiation oncology and the kinds of facilities, and there are provisions that address this issue of conflict of interest, potential conflict of interest because of financial involvement. But I'm not sure if we've done that extensively across the board with every facility or not. It's probably something that is worthy to be looked at, but I'm not sure that I'd be comfortable just doing something on the fly, but I think it's a good question.
Thank you.
Okay, we have some folks in the public that wish to testify. I see my friend Connie Perpich is here. Miss Perpich, please identify yourself for the record, Miss Perpich, and proceed with your testimony.
Connie Perpich, and I'm with Planned Parenthood of Minnesota, North and South Dakota. I'm here not in support of Senator Roebling's bill, though I do want to express a lot of appreciation to the author in working and talking with Planned Parenthood about our concerns. And she has changed it considerably from when it was first introduced, but we still have concerns about the bill. The biggest concern is being treated differently from other clinics or physicians' offices that do similar procedures. But I do want to quickly assure the committee, Planned Parenthood shares strongly Senator Roebling's concerns about health and safety of the women who come to us. Nearly 60,000 women come to us a year, the vast majority coming for contraceptive services. We do have to report annually to the state of Minnesota all occurrences in our clinics, and the other abortion providers have to report any incidences to the state. And I appreciate Senator Roebling's acknowledgement. There have not been significant issues in Minnesota. There's not been a death from abortion in Minnesota since Roe versus Wade, and there have not been significant occurrences here in Minnesota. We have to report to many federal and state requirements, such as the College of Laboratory Accreditation, Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments, Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, state and county fire codes, building codes. But most importantly, we are monitored, like all physicians' offices and health centers, by the licensing procedures the state has set up for the health professionals who work in our buildings, by the doctor's license, by the nurse's license. And if there are problems there, that is the approach Minnesota has taken. And again, we are philosophically opposed to being treated differently than the other health centers. Any questions?
And Mr.
Questions
Chair.
Questions of the testifier? Senator Roebling.
And Senator Ms. Perpich and I have agreed to disagree. We have been working on this, but I believe that this type of procedure can just as easily be classified in the outpatient surgical center category, and she thinks it should be with the regular doctor clinics, and so I think that it rises to the level where it best fits the surgical centers instead, and so that's why I'm moving forward with this amendment and bill.
Senator Goodwin, thank you for your testimony, Ms. Burbidge.
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, I don't disagree with keeping women safe in these clinics, but it's really no different than a physician's clinic that performs all kinds of surgical procedures, sometimes emergency surgical procedures, and they don't have to have this kind of license in addition to their professional license. Aren't you also concerned about the men that have vasectomies in offices that they're, which they do at the doctor's offices all the time, that don't have to be licensed in this way? And certainly I would be concerned as well about their physical health in a clinic that may not keep the standards like they should, and we know those clinics are around as well. So why didn't you include those clinics that do other kinds of surgery, invasive surgery, besides abortion clinics?
Senator Roebling.
Senator Goodwin, I just believe that this procedure can have very serious medical complications. I mean, the complications can include, among others, bleeding, infection, uterine perforation, blood clots, cervical tears, incomplete abortions, adverse reactions to anesthesia, fertility problems, emotional problems, and even death, although I am not saying that that has happened here, any of those extreme things. But because of the level of consequence of not using every caution possible, I think that this deserves, it rises to a different level and deserves some scrutiny from the Department of Health. And I do understand that there are other agencies that might come in and look at things for making sure that the building codes and fire codes are being met, and they have some of their own organizations that can provide oversight. But having the Department of Health do this, is it brings it to a different level and a little bit of a higher standard that I just feel more comfortable with.
Well, Mr. Chair? Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you. Well, Senator Roebling, I agree with that, but I really do not believe that it's any different than the surgical procedures that are done and have the same kind of potential problems or other potential problems. We could probably get a list for each one of those procedures as well. That's why I think this bill is unfair. And I think if we're going to go this route, then why not go the whole way?
Ms. Rowe?
Mr. Chair and Senator Goodwin, I would like to point out that abortion facilities are different than the places where people typically go to get many of the other different kinds of surgical procedures that you were referencing. In Minnesota, there are currently 6 major abortion facilities. Those 6 facilities essentially operate as an outpatient surgical center in the fact that people refer from all over the state, go to just those 6 different facilities to have the procedure done. Most of the patients that go there for the abortion procedure, like I said, are coming from statewide. They're being referred there from a different doctor's office. Or a different location. It's not them just going to their regular family practice doctor, as it is for many of those other more minor surgeries that are done in physicians' offices. There are only 6 facilities that do this, and more than 98% of all of the abortions in the state are done in those 6 facilities. Those are not facilities where most of the patients have a long-standing relationship with the physician. So it is a different kind of setting than a lot of those other procedures that are done in a clinical setting.
Well, Mr. Chair, one final thing. I think we all have the same concerns. None of us want abortions. None of us want to see abortions. My issue is I can't decide for somebody else and that's living under very different circumstances. But it surprises me then, quite frankly, that my amendment on the floor the other day was rejected that would have given women medically accurate information on contraception. Because if you truly want to prevent abortion, you have to make sure that they know how to prevent an unwanted pregnancy in the first place. So I think you need to get that together a little bit here and make sure that education is also the way to go to prevent abortions.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the distinguishing factor between the surgical centers and the hospital clinics, or not hospital, regular doctor's clinics, this is an invasive procedure. And I was trying to think in my mind, it's more invasive than any of the things that I can think of that a doctor would do in his office. He might remove a wart and use some Novocaine. There's much smaller things, but if you go to an orthopedic one, all you need is a arthroscopic type of procedure, that probably could be done in a clinic, but you go to a same-day surgery unit for that. So I think that I'm trying to think of what are the surgical procedures that are performed in a clinic that would match what I believe is happening when you're in an abortion. And I think that your approach here of treating these as surgical centers is very appropriate and very fair. And I think it's about time.
Anyone else from the public wish to testify for or in opposition to the bill? Or to the amendment? Members, we will vote on the amendment first. Senator Roebling has offered the A1 amendment as amended, as modified by the Senate Council. We'll say that. The A1 amendment as modified by the Senate Council. All those in favor of said amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment carries. No. Senator Roebling, do you wish to move Senate File 1921 as amended?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Right. Thank you. We'll move that to the general orders.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 1921, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on general orders.
All right. And all those in favor?